Right, we're back. Still getting used to all this. I think we've done about 14. I still get a bit not know what buttons to press and stuff, but I think we're all right. This one's recording. Welcome back to Between Consensus and Conspiracy podcast. This is Jerry and my brother Julian. Second one we're doing separately because we're both, for obvious reasons. How are you coping?
No, it's been quite a nice week. This week, Debbie came out of. I might have mentioned that Debbie, my wife, was quarantined for about a week because she came down with a cold about 2 weeks ago. So she came out, had 7 days. I think it was just a cold rather than anything serious. So she came out last Saturday. So we've had a week as a family, which is really nice.
Yeah. And
now it's 2 weeks since she came down with anything. So we're a lot more relaxed that. That she didn't have anything, or she hasn't passed anything on, and neither did the kids, because the kids were kind of coughing and sneezing for about 3 weeks ago it started. But it's all good.
My wife's been quarantined a bit, but mainly due to work. She's been up in the upstairs office all day, leaving me with the kids.
Yeah.
So they've been neglected. I got waylaid by that jigsaw puzzle a bit, didn't I? I felt like you know what I did. It was just like social media. I found myself lying to myself. I knew I had loads of stuff to do, and I'd walk past and I'd say to myself, "Let me just find that one piece," knowing full well that I was likely to be there for about an hour, till it got too uncomfortable. Anyway, that's done now, and I'm not doing that again. Now it's monstrosity in the middle of the floor, gathering dust. And she keeps telling me to put it away, and I just don't want to take it apart. But there's no use just being there either. So at some point, I'm hoping someone just takes the decision away from me. If someone else tidies it up, I'll be happy. What have you been doing? So you're coping okay mentally? Have you got a routine? What is it you do? Do you do anything just to...
having kids helps, doesn't it? Just because I'm not working, obviously, so I've been put off on leave on a percentage of pay, but both kids are at home, so I've got a 5-year-old and a 10-year-old, and the routine of that's helped a lot. So we get up in the morning, have a wash, get changed, come down, have breakfast, and then we kind of start the day and do a couple of hours at school with the kids, and then have lunch. There's a lot of kind of cooking going on, as I'm sure there is in most families, and then take them out before lunch or after lunch for an hour and potter about. Yeah, so it's really quick to get into the routine. And having kids and keeping them entertained helps, you know, helps them from getting bored. I'm coping fine, thank goodness. I think I'm in a really lucky position, you know.
I'm fine.
The blossoms out, it's lovely.
Yeah, well, I'm fine. I mean, it's the people that I've spoken to that are struggling are people that are on their own. And then that's a different kettle of fish, isn't it? I just felt like I'm going to be locked in my house for God knows how long with people that I'm close to, and I kind of felt that I wanted to be the best person that I can be if I'm locked in with them, because I kind of figured that you could end up afterwards really hating each other, or you know, grudges building, or you could use this opportunity to get close. So I wanted to be the best person that I could be. So what I've tried to do. I've got into routine, so I'll run every other morning, and then I'm doing that Sam Harris meditation course. So I do that, or I do, and I do yoga the alternate morning. So I do 3 runs around Gunsbury Park and a bit of weights, and then I do lots of yoga and do a bit of meditation afterwards, and I have one day off. But I've got rid of a lot of people off Facebook. I've blocked or holidayed a lot of people off Facebook because I can't be bothered. You know, I can't be bothered with politics now. Did you listen to that podcast? You know, we listen to podcasts. That one, the Martyr Maid about Jim Jones, Reverend Jim Jones.
Yes. What the latest one was about 6 hours.
Right? Yes, that's 6.5 hours long. But it's
unreal, isn't it? It just goes. God, I don't know. I love him to bits, but he don't half go off on tangents, does he?
Well, the 6.5 hour one is the fourth in the series, isn't it? That's the thing. But I'll tell you what he's done. That look, there were two instances in my life that I could, historical instances that I just couldn't get my head round. And coincidentally, he's done podcasts on both. So the first one was the My Lai massacre. You know, when you used to watch them Vietnam films and you used to see soldiers going, losing it, going on a rampage, going into a village, raping, murdered, killing babies, all sorts. And I was just like, how would you do that? That's not me. But I always had it in my head that people do it, and it doesn't happen. And it happens quite often in the right environment. So there must be something to it. And then the other thing was the Jamestown massacre, where the Reverend Jim Jones had a group of followers and got over 900 of them to drink the Kool-Aid and commit suicide. So two instances of history that I just could never get my head around. He's done podcasts on both and made them make sense. Yeah. And you could cut, it takes you in there and you can understand it. But there was, at the end, it was really quite haunting that there was a recording of Jim Jones having a bit of a rant about the evils of capitalism and the government and this, that and the other. And I thought, you know what? If you put that down on paper, that wouldn't look out of place on my Facebook from one or two people. Right. So, you know, and I say that as a joke, but it was true. It was true. I'm not mentioning any names. So I've just blocked, you know, I don't want to not hear opposing arguments, because I do, but I just think there's a time and a place. And I think it brings me down a little bit. So I just kind of wanted to do that. The other thing that I found that's a bit bad was that too many podcasts keep coming through, right? So I'm on a constant firefight to get rid of the podcasts. So now what happens is I'm doing yoga or a bit of meditation, but the only way I can get through my podcast is to listen at 1.5 or twice the speed. Yeah. So I'm trying to be all zen with really quick talking in my head. So I'm having difficulty managing that. I think I might need to just get rid of some of them. But, you know, I always used to joke, right? Didn't I always used to joke? Because whenever I used to people used to pick me up about my funny ways, and I always used to say, yeah, but you wait till the apocalypse. I'll be better prepared. I'll be ready for it. I didn't think it would happen, did I? I didn't really think that we'd be here. But I think it was because I think I always, you know what it is? It's that control thing, isn't it? I used to think, I was worried that I was getting tight. It's because I don't like waste. And it's not that I don't like throwing stuff away. It's like everything I do, I try to maximise the efficiency. So even if it's petrol, I try and drive at the right speed. We went through a phase of when Dad used to say that, point out at petrol prices, which is, I remember thinking, oh God, what a saddo, what a bore. But I certainly do that now. I turn the engine off. Whenever the kids have their breakfast, I always use the leftover milk. I can go on forever. And I thought maybe I'm just getting tired. And then, do you know what did it for me? Was we used to go to Nando's every Thursday, me and my friends. And in the Victoria Nando's that we had, it had a leaky soap box, you know, like where you get the soap by the sink. And I didn't think about it. It was subconscious. It just occurred to me that I never got soap from the container. I always got soap that had fallen onto the side and dipped my hands in it, because I wanted to use that rather than the stuff in the machine. So... So anyway, whenever you lot or my missus used to pick me up, and that was it, wasn't it? Yeah, but you wait till the Walking Dead comes true. I'll be there surviving while you lot struggling. But I think mentally I'm all right. Mentally I'm fine. But I think it's the loneliness. What I've noticed, the people that are on their own are going to struggle.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's a hell of a lot of people out there I'm in a seriously lucky position that I have or had a job and I've been put on paid leave essentially through that government scheme, but I'm well aware that there's probably loads of people and a couple of people I know that have been self-employed and can't get much money off the government or people that run companies that are struggling. I'm sure there's a chunk, probably half the population that are struggling a hell of a lot more than I am or we are. But then you think, God, I mean, I touched on it last week. It's like my bigger concern is, or one of my bigger concerns is, how this is going to affect other countries when it hits in Africa and India and South America. Oh, well, and you think, And it again, it, I keep on like thinking, Christ, we're fucking. I went out yesterday to take the bin around the corner, and I walked outside, and the sun's out, and the blossoms on the trees. And I thought, Jesus Christ, we're such a kind of privileged first world version of a crisis, yeah. Isn't it?
No, I know, but it's happening like, in India now.
Just sitting at home, trying not to eat too much food.
Yeah. Well, that's what all in India, South Africa, a lot of them places, they've just closed them down at 4 hours' notice. Nigeria, yeah. I saw it on the Nigeria. Well, they got, you know, they're living hand to mouth, them people.
Yeah.
You know, how are you going to, you know, they haven't got storage, you know, they haven't got, half of them ain't even got bloody fridges, let alone freezers or anything like that.
Yeah.
Oh, it's going to be horrendous. I was thinking the other day that we're lucky with food prices and stuff like that. I mean, there was a greengrocer that was on the radio the other day saying that she said, look, I'm trying to keep open, but my prices are going up. So for me to be able to make it viable, my prices have to go up. And now I'm getting people shouting at me in the streets and giving me death threats because they're saying I'm spiking up the prices. Taking advantage. She said, but the whole system has got more expensive. And you think, I was thinking, if it does hit into, you look at all our food production. I remember having a discussion with you years ago, thinking, hold on, but if we only 30% of the food that we need to sustain ourselves is made in this country. That's kind of, it's kind of a risky state of affairs. So the vast majority, you know, it's one of the benefits of globalism was lifting some of the poorer parts of the world out of poverty by being able to grow food in them places. But if those people now are then going to have to be tucked away in their houses, who's going to pick and grow that food? So, you know, if it does last a long time, it could have that financial effect. I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah. Christ, yeah.
You know, I mean, it's... You know what's kind of bugged me? Is this argument, you're putting the economy before lives. And it's like, well, it's always got to be a two-pronged problem.
Yeah,
because a tanked economy costs lives, surely, you know. Do you remember watching The Big Short?
Yeah.
Remember The Big Short? It was about the financial crisis, wasn't it? And there was a bit in there where I think the Brad Pitt bloke, or was it Brad Pitt was in it? I can't remember, but he was talking to someone. And he said a 1% increase in unemployment in America costs 40,000 lives.
Right,
a 1% increase in unemployment, right? So all these people that are trying to say you don't think the economy, people are having discussions as to whether or not what we're doing is overblown. Yeah, whether locking everybody up is being hysterical. And the argument is, I saw Matthew Parris make this argument first of all. And I thought he was brave, and then Toby Young has made it, and then he got absolutely piled on. The basic argument is we're sacrificing the future of the young to keep an amount of older people alive for a couple of extra years, but ruining the lives of the young by what we're doing, right? Now, I don't agree with that argument, right?
Ruining the lives of the young because we're putting them a huge financial cost.
Yeah, by the big bailout and closing everything down. Yeah. Now, I don't agree with that argument because I think the reason why we're doing what we're doing is because it's spreading at such a rate. I mean, it's kind of strange because that Oxford University thing thought that it's possible that 50% of us have already had it, but so many of us don't show the symptoms. But the truthful fact of it is, and something that after last week's podcast, I felt a bit of a tick because I said we keep waiting for the tidal wave to come and it doesn't come. And then I thought, yeah, but it's not going to come here at my house, is it? I'm not in a hospital seeing it. And by all accounts, every report from hospitals is that they're inundated. I mean, but look. Mistakes have been made for sure, but from what I think it's utterly shameful that the people that are putting their lives at risk haven't got the equipment to keep them safe. However, on the other side of the coin, I think it's pretty incredible how quickly they've built them three massive hospitals, and so far, the NHS in London is functioning okay, apart from the fact that the individuals people working there aren't getting the help that they needed, but all of that's connected, isn't it? Whether or not we can have a sustainable welfare state in the future is if we've got a functioning economy. So I don't buy that argument in a sense, because if you have us all mixing, those numbers are going to go up much quicker and going to make the NHS collapse, and especially when those people haven't got the tools to fight it properly. So I don't buy that argument. However, I think it's a valid argument to be able to have. And that's what it's like, what we're always talking about. I want to be able to. I don't piss myself if I hear an argument that upsets me. I can handle that. I can say, right, well, intellectually, how can I agree or disagree with that? But what happens is that the machine goes into force and tries to close down that argument. And that's, I suppose, that's what we talk about most of the time, isn't it? And it does my head in. It's constant. You've mentioned that to me before plenty of times. But that money...
The pearl clutching when certain people say certain things is insane, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've got countries like Sweden, who so many on the left are so quick to put out front and centre as this great panacea that we should all aim to be like.
Yeah.
Who are going totally against the grain and doing the Boris Kanuni thing.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not calling it that, but effectively they're doing that.
No one, like I said last week, no one knows the right fucking answer. No. I'm not going to know any of the right answers until 10 years' time, are you? 5 years' time, once it's all over and the dust has settled. And
well, did you see yesterday?
Work out where you can get an idea that certain countries did it better in certain ways, but none of us are South Korea.
No.
Supposedly South Korea at the stage where they got hit hard by the last coronavirus crisis, and they'd already prepared for it, and as a culture they walk around in masks anyway. That's a little thing I wanted to bring up, because I know I brought it out with you this morning. It kind of has been playing on the whole thing's been playing on my mind for about 3 or 4 weeks since this all kind of started up, and I first heard that the people talking about out wearing masks isn't the correct thing to do. And it was like, just a little thing, I'd had discussions with people and they're trying to convince me that, yeah, of course it's not the right thing to do because the germs get stuck in a mask and you can touch your face more and all this stuff. And I thought, never quite settled in my head right. I thought, it doesn't make any sense, does it? That it's essential for doctors in surgeries to have masks, but not essential for Joe Blocks to have a mask. In fact, it's not encouraged at all. Just didn't make any sense. And then the last few days they've been talking about the re-evaluating that. And I'd seen so many articles in loads of newspapers and the BBC quite a few times, all saying the same thing. Yes, no, we shouldn't be wearing masks unless you've got the disease. If you haven't got the disease, there's no reason to wear a mask. And then you've got so they've been reevaluating that advice over the last couple of days, and then a couple of days ago they came out, or yesterday they came out, the US medical said that in fact we should totally reevaluate that advice, and now it's encouraged that everyone should be wearing a mask, regardless of whether you've got the disease or not. And then the story that kind of made it a major headline this morning was that Trump has turned around and said he's not going to wear a mask. So Trump isn't going to wear a mask. He doesn't think it's the right thing to do. And if he meets heads of state and talks to people, he's not going to want to do it with a mask. And that was the headline on the BBC this morning. I've since seen someone post a Facebook post with it as a headline in The Guardian. And it's almost as though... So the BBC and The Guardian have been telling me for weeks that I shouldn't be wearing a mask. So what's the right thing to do?
Yeah.
I mean, I know Weinstein had brought this up yesterday on Joe Rogan and said, actually, what the issue is that they've been lying to us this whole time. Of course the right thing to do would be to wear a mask, which is why in South Korea they've got a culture of wearing masks, and that's probably one of the reasons that the disease rate's so low. And it's like, so all these Asian countries have been wearing masks because they've got that culture, and they've kept the disease much better under control than we have here. And yet, for some reason, we're supposed to believe all these outlets that have told us for the last few weeks, including the World Health Organization, that we shouldn't be wearing masks.
They said it today again, the World Health... I saw a Twitter thing today. Yeah, they've gone against what the Americans have said. I think it sounds like the Guardian or the BBC. What you're meant to do is anything that Trump, the opposite to what Trump says. So it seems to be that they're following what Trump isn't doing, rather than what WHO should be saying.
But that's what pissed me off. It's like, well, the honest thing to do would be to say, okay, we've been telling you for weeks that you shouldn't be wearing a mask. We all know you should be wearing a mask, and we all know that the reason we're telling you not to wear a mask is because there'll be a rush on masks, and then the hospitals and the doctors and people that really need them won't have them. That's really what's going on. I think anyone with a bit of common sense can work that out. But come on, just be a bit honest about it. And if you're not honest about it, that kind of stuff shows up. People aren't stupid, I don't think.
But,
and that's where the conspiracy stuff starts, isn't it? Mm. When you look at major mainstream media companies and you know that deep down they're lying to you, it's not a good place to be.
Well, I think the American thing, look, there are masks and there are masks from what I can tell. You've got the proper professional masks that I suppose it doctors and surgery and stuff. You know what I read the other day? A significantly higher proportion of ear, nose and throat doctors are dying compared to others, and you're just wondering, well, why is that? Are they getting close? That's the point. There's so much we don't know. But I suppose if you're going to be in people's faces and close, you definitely need professional masks. But if I'm going for a run around Gunnersbury Park, and on the odd at half six in the morning, and on the odd occasion I'm going to pass someone about 6 feet away, you know, I run with a little sports towel, and whenever I'm getting close to anyone, I put it over my face, just in case, you know, any of my particles get out on them or the other way round. And I would have thought that the argument, so some people would be saying, yeah, but that won't stop it. No, it may not, but it might improve it a bit. And that's the point. If everybody's wearing some sort of basic mask, I would have thought there'd be an improvement as opposed to nobody wearing masks. But that was the point, was in America, is that they knew they didn't have enough. So if they were to encourage people to get masks, everybody would be trying to get them at the same time. The people that would really have needed them wouldn't have got them. So the argument was that a lie was put out at that point. And I suppose, you know, there are liars and there are liars. I mean, that lie was probably done with good intent. There are moral liars, aren't there, for a greater good?
Yeah.
But it does erode trust, doesn't it, if it comes out in that sense? Yeah.
And I can't honestly see any of these companies coming out, even in 2 months' time, admitting that they lied.
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem, isn't it?
Oh, there's lots of problems, isn't there? I mean, the problems that we've made, I think that you know, that because I've only listened to the first. There are two people that have only come to our, you know, all the stuff we normally talk about is all the university American overtly PC madness. But some of the upsides to it is that it's introduced us to people that have been in the middle of some of them storms. And one of them was a guy called Brett Weinstein, who we've spoken about before. He's a evolutionary biologist teacher, and his wife Heather Hayling, who is a biology teacher. And they've done the 3 series podcasts on this and how they think it'll affect society and stuff. So I've only listened to the first one, but she made a point that the squirrel analogy, when one of her first teachers was trying to explain to the class that squirrels were a bit stupid because they're not efficient, because they will gather more acorns and bury them than they will need, because they won't need anywhere near as many acorns as they waste at a level of energy and bury. But she worked out quite quickly that they weren't burying to get through that winter. They were burying, they constantly bury enough because it's hardwired into them to bury more than enough for the odd awful winter that comes along. And I think that's what that's part of our whole system that's gone wrong, isn't it? The fact that we've tried to maximize efficiency, but we never have enough for a rainy day, do we? So all of a sudden we're okay when things are going well. It's like my life, isn't it? I always try and pack in the maximum I can, but as soon as something goes well, or it all goes wobbly. And I think that's been the mistake. I mean, the protective clothing that we had, when they went to use it, it was all out of date. And then, you know, who's to blame for that? There's so many different people that have been in charge at different times. And then all of a sudden, then you've got to get all the new stuff, but the whole world want the new stuff.
But that is the problem, isn't it? I'm really not one to. I don't like this criticism of governments and world leaders. I think I said it last week. Yeah. I don't quite get it. It's just such a difficult thing to get right. And I don't get anything. In hindsight, you look back, I don't think anyone's got it right. It's probably a fluke that South Korea had a load of stuff left over from the last pandemic, because it wasn't that long ago. But yeah, well, there was that article that you posted on Facebook after the French minister had bought millions of pounds worth of stuff, and that all went out of date. So what are we supposed to spend millions and millions and tens and hundreds of millions on stuff that essentially happens once every 100 years? It's a fluke occurrence, isn't it?
Well, that was the point. I remember last time that there was a flu epidemic or scare, and we bought a load of vaccinations that never ever got used and went out of date. And the people who did that were absolutely slaughtered for doing it, weren't they? I think the big difference between us and the Asian countries is all of those SARS, COVID-19, there were a few of them, MERS, wasn't it? Some of them were much deadlier. What happened was they were closer to the scares, weren't they? So because they never ever came to us, we just take it for granted. I forget what I've said in various podcasts or I speak to whoever. I remember there was a story about a guy who knew about the death camps in the Second World War. They got evidence. I think some Polish people went in there. They committed crimes solely to go in there to have a look, so when they escaped, they could give the news to the world. And the world didn't want to believe it, because you don't want to believe something so dreadful. I've just started to watch Chernobyl. It's the same thing. You know, something absolutely terrible's gone, and I think you could just lie your way out of it, because I think there's something in the human psyche that doesn't want to take the enormity of problems in, and it's difficult to imagine it. So that's probably why they've done better. I mean, as with China, I don't believe a word of their figures. There was a thing the other day that came out yesterday, wasn't there? Andrew Neil said it looks like they think that everything that they've given us. A lot of the figures that they've given us are wrong, the death figures and stuff like that. The problem that we've got is a lot of our models is based on the figure that the details that they've given us. So if they've given us false information, our models could be wrong. I mean, China's a funny one, isn't it? China's a really weird one, because it's come from China, and this is I don't want to get political, because I'm reading a book at the moment, and it said that the best way of trying to deal with things is like you're an independent judge looking at everything. Now, I'm fully aware that I've got biases, but I will try. So I'm going to change my style. I don't want to be sticking it to one side or the other. But I find it really bizarre that that certain people with a certain political persuasion seem to look at China quite sympathetically, considering their track record. I mean, let's look at it. You know, those markets are absolutely horrific. I mean, imagine now as sent a video around the other day where they were, I don't even know if I want to repeat it, but I'm not showing it, but it's so horrific. Like a dog being cooked alive in a wok, you know, and all you could hear is the dog crying, you know, that sort of stuff. I mean, it's constant. I mean, everybody knows you shouldn't have different species of live animals in such a small confined area, right? So it's the animal cruelty, which should be something which is on the left, right? What else at the left? The left will go mental over a Danish cartoon, and certain parts of the left will go mental, but will half blame the Charlie Hebdo cartoonists for their own slaughter. Yet the Chinese put however million Uyghur Muslims in camps and try and kind of brainwash their religion out of them. Utter silence on that. You know, what else are China guilty of? You know,
expelling the journalists.
Oh, expelling the journalists,
freedom.
Yeah.
It's like, isn't it?
Yeah, it's freedom, like, freedom like, of I mean, speech.
Like, welded people in their houses to try and stop this, isn't it? It's just like, it's one thing after another, isn't it?
Well, you know, the opioid crisis in America. you know, that they know. I mean, it's out. I just wanted to double check this today because I heard someone mention it the other day, but they'd reminded me of something I'd read before. Most of the fentanyl that's coming into what happened was that, you know, the pharmaceuticals in America, you know, they get in with the doctors, anyone with a bit of pain, and also, you know, the industrialization. People were losing their jobs, so it's better to go on the sick. And so all these people were getting prescribed these really high opiates and in America, which has ruined a lot of white America, isn't it? Poor white America. And then what happened was that when the scandal came out and they realised doctors were getting paid to prescribe all this stuff, so then Obama tried to clamp it out, made it a lot more difficult. But those people are now addicted, so now they went elsewhere. So a lot of fentanyl that's coming into America comes from China. It's cheap grade from China, synthetic fentanyl from China. And it comes directly into America, but it also goes to the Mexican cartels. So the Mexican cartels are mixing it with things. In America, I was reading there's been a big spike in ecstasy deaths, and it's not the ecstasy that's killing them, it's the ecstasy of being laced with fentanyl, so much of it. Joe Rogan's done a couple of podcasts on it, hasn't he? But they reckon 70,000 people died last year. Yeah, you know, in America, it's the biggest drug killer in American history, and it's 50 times stronger than heroin, and only 2 milligrams can kill someone, right? So and they know it's coming from China. Trump has brought it up. There won't be a company in China making this stuff, sending this stuff without the Chinese authorities knowing about it. And I've seen it before. Aaron Bastani kind of saying Chinese are doing it brilliant, almost being really kind of sycophantic towards them. Richard Bergen from the Labour man, was the same. But you're getting it all in from the American left, and I think it's like anything.
Yeah.
So Gove will say, well, China should have done more. Then all of a sudden that side say, oh, look what Gove's doing. You know, then he's trying to blame the Chinese. And then all of a sudden, in their determination to stick it to the government, make it look like they're on the side of the Chinese. And they fall into that trap where they're constantly the enemy, or they see the greatest evil as either Britain and America. So anyone who's up against them can't be anywhere near as bad. And it's just bizarre, because it just exposes their hypocrisy.
It's totally bizarre.
Yeah.
It's quite insane when you think about it, isn't it? It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, they built this hospital, this Nightingale Hospital, in what, 9 days or something?
Yeah.
I haven't seen a word of praise. All you ever get is negative.
Yeah.
You're constant. It's bizarre.
Well, like I say,
it's very... Like you said last week, it's like, the evil Tory scum want to kill off the old people, and it's like, well, yeah, like you said, the higher percentage of Tory voters are old people.
Yeah.
So it's a bit self-defeating, isn't it?
Yeah. No,
it is just any old trope of nonsense. Well,
I look at the Guardian every night. I don't know why, but I do, and it's just one negative story after a negative story. And look, no government should be above scrutiny, right? And it's okay, fair. Look, it'll all come out in an investigation at some point in the future, and I guarantee mistakes would have been made. I guarantee it. And I'm not one to say you shouldn't be doing it, we've got a war on, you shouldn't do that till it's all over. I'm not saying that at all, but it is constant. There is never any of the good stuff that is happening. Some of the stuff that I'd listened to a couple of podcasts on how the NHS has just dumped its bureaucracy, that people that are there that are making decisions, saying good ideas are coming in, and within an hour they're being worked on in a way that has never ever happened before. Now, that doesn't mean that Boris is to give, that doesn't necessarily mean that Boris is deserves a pat on the back, because Boris probably has got very little to do with that. It's the machinery behind it. But if you're not going to give credit to Boris for doing that, which I think is fair, you can't blame him for everything that goes wrong as well, because it is the machine. You know, there is a massive machine. That Cobra and stuff like that. I listened to a really good podcast about a guy who used to work at Cobra, and just how the machinery that works behind it. He says it's the Rolls Royce of how that functions, and how it all kicks into place at a time of emergency. And you're not going to get anything right. You can't. When you've got thousands and thousands of decisions to be made, you're off your head if you think that every one of those decisions should be right. Someone,
well, it's just nonsense, isn't it? I mean, you've got. I was in a park the other day, and there was two old women walking around, kind of slagging off the government, and it's capitalism gone mad, and we've had, of course, I blame the Tories, and it's for like 10 years, 15 years of cutbacks and austerity and all this, and you think, well, so what does that go for? Kind of countries like Italy, who are having a hell of a time, Spain, who are having a hell of a time. Switzerland have got much higher numbers. I'm not talking about absolute numbers, but percentage of population.
Yeah.
Switzerland, Belgium, all much higher than us, at least probably double. And you said, well, these are countries that invest heavily in their insurance. You can't. Yeah. It's not as straightforward as people want to make out. It's such a complex thing.
No, of course it is. And if you think them people, and you've got a decision to make, you make that decision, it's going to cost that amount of lives. You make that decision, it's going to cost that amount of lives. And that one could, the difference between the two could be 5,000 people. You think them people are make taking them decisions lightly. If you do, you're just a div, and you're not worthy, in my opinion, you're not worthy of having a conversation with. They haven't got a load of masks and safety equipment in the down-in-house garden while they're all there with their feet up trying to think, oh, I'll get around to it at some point. You know, everyone is after this stuff at the same time. There was a thing in America where the trade rules, that they're making masks, but they have to give them masks to whoever's offering this price and that price. You saw it. Germany bought a load of masks off China. America tried to nick it, diverted it to them at the last minute. So everyone is shuffling for this stuff. And then China bought up a load of stuff in January when they knew it was happening, when the World Trade Organization was saying it's not passed from human to human. Right. And then also a lot of the stuff that they've sold to certain countries don't work. They're being sent back. It's a real Wild West at the moment. And the other thing is, I read something.
Oh, yeah, that was one of the headlines this morning, wasn't it?
Yeah.
America are being accused of modern day piracy by getting these masks. It's a bit of a weird one, that, because it's 3M's an American company.
Yeah.
So they're American made masks that are being sold via some other country to Germany, in this case, and America have somehow got their hands on them.
Yeah.
But it's one of those weird things of like globalization and international trade, isn't it?
You've got
these things that are kind of like ending up all over the world and probably end up where they started off from in the first place.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing with China. Too much medicine is coming from there, isn't it, at the moment? And that's what I think things will change on the world trade the front. I mean, I read, just to close, because we're going to finish soon, but I even read in Sweden and Germany where the numbers are different, because I think a lot of people that were getting it in Germany were younger people, which is why they've got quite a low death rate, but now it's kind of spreading and they're catching up a bit. But I also read about Sweden, that what they're doing is that different countries are counting the deaths differently, because some countries are saying that if you have a heart attack or something else while you've got COVID-19, they're putting the deaths down to the COVID-19. However, some countries that are saying that if you've died from a heart attack whilst having COVID-19, they're not putting the death down to COVID-19, they're putting the death down to the heart attack, which is an argument, because you could die while you have it, because correlation and causation, isn't it, that whole argument. You could die with it, but it's not that killed you. Do you know what I mean? So it's there is a real fog, and then you've got different companies that are trying to spin their figures in different ways, and creating a fog, and there is that fog of war.
And it does make, absolutely, it does make sense. When you look at some of the figures, it's like horrific. It's the numbers that are coming in out of Italy and us now as well, and Spain and France and America, compared to a lot of other countries. It's kind of, I've been watching it for a few weeks now and kind of thinking, well, at some point all these other countries are going to explode, and a lot of these, you see it creeping up in places like India and Russia and Bangladesh and Mexico. And it's like, it's just not, I don't know, I've been watching it for about 3 weeks, and it's just not where I thought it would be now, you know? So maybe, you're right. Maybe
where did you, what, in, that, what, in Britain, you mean, or the world, you mean?
Well, the numbers, no. Britain is going along with the Italys and the Americas on that part of,
that's
the experts say supposedly like doubling every 4 days.
Yeah.
And that exponential growth. And And I've been watching these other countries for a few weeks now on this, you know, the Worldometer website. Yeah. You look at numbers of each country individually. And just looking at places like Bangladesh and Mexico and South Africa, and you see it kind of where we were like 1 or 2 weeks ago, and I've been thinking, well, these are all going to explode.
Yeah.
But they still haven't. And that probably is, again, like down to what you were saying.
Yeah, well, management, that a lot of countries isn't it? Are. And do you want? I remember reading the Churchill book. It's a brilliant story in the Churchill book. Was that when he was in World War One, that one of his men were killed by one of his other men. I think they were mucking about or something like that, and a gun went off, and one of the soldiers was killed by accident. And the question was, are you honest? Are you honest? Do you want a soldier to get in trouble for an accident? You know, in an environment where they're not properly trained, they're probably conscripts, they're probably 19 years old, they haven't grown up yet. Do you want to punish that kid and then also make the pain worse for the family of the dead soldier, knowing that your son died in an absolute waste? Or is it better to lie to the people, to tell them that their son was a hero and he died in battle? Do you know what I mean? So his argument, the argument was, it's better to lie in that instance so you don't punish someone for an accident, and then you leave a positive story to left children or parents and uncles and aunties. But it does, you know, and that was his famous saying. Yeah. So there's a bit of the Churchill impression. Sometimes in times of war, the truth should be guarded with a line of, what is it, with a line of lies or something like that. The truth should be safely guarded with a wall of lies. So the argument is, sometimes it's better to be dishonest if you can have stability, if it doesn't create negativity in the battle that you're in.
Yeah,
and that kind of made sense. But then it does make you think, well, where's the truth? Do you know what I mean? You could watch one of them programs, or who are we now, or where are, what is it, what are them programs, so you find out who your family is?
Who do you think you are?
Yeah, who do you think you are? And then that person finds out that their great-grandfather was a World War One hero, and you just don't know. You don't know. He might have been shot by his mate after a can of corned beef and half a bottle of beer. I don't know. You know, we just don't know, do we? So little in life that we know for sure, yet we all talk as if we do. That's why I've given up on the Trump stuff. You know, because you read in America, I mean, I love Andrew Sullivan, and everything Trump does is desperately bad, and he's a conservative, Andrew Sullivan is, and so I really buy him, I really do. But then I'll listen to, and then you listen to the CNN, and it's so showed a terrible bits that Trump do, and you think, yeah, that's got to be bad. He's got to be decent. He is definitely an idiot. And then you'll see the other side that shows that the other side said very similar things as what he's being criticised for. And then you'll see Trump saying some things that actually sound okay. And I'm thinking, you know what? I'm not viewing it properly. All I'm getting fed is little bits here and there. For me to really know the truth, I'd have to spend a lot of time looking at it, studying it, and I haven't got the time or inclination. So I tend not to make judgment on it anymore. Yet all I ever do is see people making 100% judgments. No, he's this or he's this. And it's like, you don't know. It's like, you know what, the perfect example of it was when there was a coup or some sort of uprising in one of them South American countries. I think it might have been Venezuela or one of them. And you know, within 10 minutes, people on either side know exactly what's happening. None of them have been there ever in their lives. But the Ocasio-Cortez, Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez knows and will post her formulated 100% opinion that it's America that are destabilising the country. And the other side are saying, look, this is 100%, this shows socialism doesn't work, they're eating animals out of the zoo. And it's like, well, none of you have been there. And all you're doing is, like, again, you're trying to, it's, I don't know, it's like online tennis, isn't it? Just lobbing. And people, it's as if they want to be lied to. It's like your side's under pressure, and then someone comes out with a fancy narrative, and you think, right, I'll grab onto that. And then you use that fancy narrative in your battle. But again, you don't know. Who knows?
No.
So, yeah. No. So I suppose on that note, yeah. All right, okay. All right, well, sorry, went on a bit, didn't we, a little bit.
Well, might do another one, Nick.
Okay, yeah.
There's nothing else to do.
No, there's not. No, not really. And we just, yeah, so the tidal wave has come. I just wanted to correct that from last week. And just, yeah, I've just got nothing but admiration for the people that are out there on the front line. Imagine having to go to work knowing you're putting yourself in that danger, man. It really is like going into battle, isn't it? It really is like getting out over the trenches.
Every day, and out like,
yeah.
I had a bit of a sleepless night the other night. I was like, I looked at some figures kind of just before I went to bed, and I woke up in the middle of the night worrying where we're going to end up.
Yeah.
But just imagine being on the front line. I mean, this is in London, and she's like, every day she's doing like 10, 12 hours, and she hasn't had a day off in a couple of weeks, and you think, I hope she's sleeping like a baby, but I can't imagine a lot of them are, you know?
No, I know, it's just awful. No, mate, they deserve better, that's for sure. I think there'll be a lot of changes after this, and I hope those people are treated with a bit more respect than they deserve, you know? I hope we see them in we don't. I just think it's just something else that we've just taken for granted too much. Anyway, mate, all right, I'll speak to you in a week, but we may do another podcast next weekend, yeah?
Yeah.
All right, okay. See you later. All right, bye.